The J-Talk Podcast.
Yosh.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, though we had a shorter than anticipated match day due to the typhoon passing through eastern Japan, there was still plenty of action for us to discuss at both ends of the J1 table.
Yeah, there was. It was a shame about the typhoon. Obviously, it took away quite a few interesting games. And I don't know, it seemed to have an effect on some players because there was a lot of rubbish played this weekend. Not dull, not boring or anything like that, but a lot of teams just playing out terrible passes, missing open goals, just some awful refereeing decisions. So, yeah, we've still got a lot to discuss, even though we lost quite a few games.
Indeed, it might have had something to do with the atmospheric pressure or something like that, Sam, passing over the country. Who knows? But yes, we did lose three games, all scheduled for Saturday evening to a typhoon. I believe it was typhoon number 8. The way it worked out, yeah, we lost games involving three of the top four teams in the table. Yokohama F. Marinos and their home game against Shonan was postponed, as was fourth placed at kickoff, Kawasaki Frontale's game versus Kyoto, while the third-placed Cerezo Osaka had obviously already made their way to the capital to face FC Tokyo, but that game was also postponed, and those games are still to be rescheduled as we record on Monday night. So there was still some action in the top six, of course, but while, yes, we did lose some important-looking games involving three members of the top four, we thought we'd start off this week's episode down at the foot of the table where things continue to get down and dirty in the relegation dogfight, Sam. But in the two games that did get played on Saturday, we had some more movement at the foot of the table. Yes, once again, the musical chairs down there continued, and Kobe hauled themselves off the foot of the table with a 2-0 win away at Sapporo in the game that opened up the match day.
Yeah, that is, and a welcome relief for Kobe, the way things have been going. Obviously, the previous midweek, they'd lost again to the COVID-riddled Vispa Fukuoka side, so they bowed out of the Levain Cup, so they really needed some sort of boost. That wasn't necessarily the case when it was seen that Andres Iniesta wasn't in the starting lineup, but they took out Kobayashi as well. They played Osaki, who's not the flashiest player, but at least he's someone giving that defence some protection, and they were better protected in this game, and they found a way to win. I don't think it was pretty. The two goals come via deflections or fortune in some manner. They didn't really create too much, but yeah, they've managed to hold the Sapporo side who'd won scored five the previous week. So yeah, really important for Vissel Kobe, if not flashy. And I don't think it's necessarily a sign that Kobe are back to their best by any means, but at this stage of the season, it doesn't matter. It's just 3 points.
Indeed. And well, this is just another perfect indication of the unpredictability of the J-League. And yeah, betting on this league is just an absolute mug's game because, as you say, Sam, yeah, Sapporo had gone away from home the previous game and scored five at Shonan, and then to return home and face a Kobe team rock bottom and not trouble the scorers, as we like to say in a cricket parlance, and fall 2-0 to the cellar dwellers is, just an indication of how inconsistent Misha Petrovic's side is. So for them, Shinzo Kuroki had an early chance from 6 yards in the 16th minute that he might have done better, I think, in his pomp. But unfortunately for Sapporo, he shot wide. And then from there, yes, the rest of the first half pretty much turned in to the Koya Yuruki show. He had a shot well saved by Takanori Sugino in the 20th minute, but 8 minutes later, he put the visitors 1-0 up with a terrific drive from the edge of the box. Then in the fourth minute of first half stoppage time, a Yuruki shot from 25 yards, though he was fortunate on this occasion, the ball taking a deflection, maybe even a second smaller deflection, and it flew in past a wrong-footed Sugino. So at half time, Sam, Vissel went in 2-0 up. I guess the most amazing thing to come out of this game is the fact that, yeah, we didn't see any goals at all in the second half. A Sapporo side that is always so attacking and a Kobe side that is usually so brittle, especially when they have a lead to try and protect. I was stunned at the full-time whistle to see that Kobe had actually hung on and that Sapporo hadn't gotten anything from the game, especially as they far from safe themselves. And, you know, obviously they still have so much to play for to secure their own safety. But at the end of the day, yeah, all Vissel can do is take away the 3 points. And, by hook or by crook, they did it.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, I was very surprised by that second half performance from Sapporo, because I think they'd started well, and then after that Kuroki miss, it just kind of all fell apart for them. But usually you expect some sort of swashbuckling performance second half, just throw every striker available on and really go for it and open it up at one end or the other, usually against them, Sapporo. But yeah, it wasn't like that. They made the changes didn't really make them more attacking. I mean, they brought on Gabriel Xavier for Kuroki. If anything, he's less of a striker than Kuroki and he's going to play deeper. And everything else was just like-for-like substitutions. It wasn't until 5 minutes to go they actually brought on another striker in Tucic. So, yeah, it was quite weird, I thought, the approach from Sporum. Very un-Petrovic-like. I don't know if he's just taken some of the comments from Messrs. Bothroyd and others that they've been too open and too attacking and really reined in the worst possible game to do so. But, it was very surprising. But maybe you do have to give credit to Kobe. They sat in a lot deeper than they would usually do. As I mentioned earlier, Osaki came into that holding role. Like they've been pretty poor all season, but the best period they had was when Hashimoto was there and playing in that holding position. And just to have someone there, he's not flashy, he doesn't do anything too great, but at least he's there and he does provide some sort of shield, which they absolutely did not have with Kobayashi. They've tried him in that position, but really he's an attacking midfielder. His natural first thought is to go forward, and he doesn't have that ability and that discipline to stay in front of the back line. So Osaki did that, and it worked well for them. And yeah, they were pretty rock solid defensively, which is something I never thought I would say this week, considering their performance against Cerezo Osaka last week.
Yes, indeed. And before we leave this game, then a quick word, Sam, on the 88th minute incident where Kobe were initially awarded a penalty for a foul on Nanase Ino, VAR changing that to a free kick on the edge of the box. Did you think this was messing with something that didn't need to be messed with, or did VAR get this right or wrong?
In my opinion. And there were a lot of similar incidents this week. As Komai and Ino come together, I think they first meet just outside the area. But once Komai has brought his arm out and does the push, it's inside the area. And I don't understand why that wasn't given as a penalty. I mean, we'll come on to other ones like that. They're all pretty much the same. They gave them all those free kicks this week, which I guess is consistency, but in my opinion, it was consistently wrong across the board. So, yeah, I thought that was a lucky break for Sapporo, but at least in this game, it doesn't really affect anything too much unless Kobe go down by one goal of goal difference.
Indeed. All right. So, 2-0, it did finish. And after the early kickoff on Saturday, I was beginning to question my ability to perhaps speak things into existence. You remember, listeners, on last week's episode, we mentioned the possibility that if Kobe and Iwata both won on Saturday, that would send Gunma Osaka to the foot of the table before they played Shimizu on Sunday. So, we were 50% right after the Kobe result. And then I must admit to uttering an expletive under my breath, Sam, when I saw the full-time score from Iwata versus Urawa. I can't say I expected 6-0 to come, but looking at the highlights, Urawa absolutely did it in second gear by the looks of things. They've absolutely cruised in the stronger sense of the word to a huge victory, a tennis score, as we've mentioned that we might get in a few games here and there in the past few weeks at the Ecopa World Cup Stadium. It was an absolute romp. It's ultimately cost Iwata manager Akira Ito his job as his side returned to the foot of the table. And, I don't think we need to question whether Reds got the result their performance merited on Saturday night.
No, Reds were very clinical, but they played very well. I thought Koizumi probably had one of his best games since we crowned him one of the players of the half season last season. Generally they're pressing. They really were ruthless in getting onto any mistake that Jubilo made, and they made a lot of them in this game. I thought it was just terrible performance from Iwata. I've said most of the season, I don't think they've got too much quality there, but under Ito, generally they've managed to dig in and get in games, and they've not really been battered at all this season, but this was horrendous from almost the first minute. I mean, their backline was slightly changed by various injuries or absences, so they had to play Suzuki as one of the centre-backs and Ogawa as one of the centre-backs. Not really ideal positions for them. But it wasn't just the inability to defend that was the problem. It was just simple passes. They just kept giving the ball away, and Urawa just kept punishing them from it. I mean, it was a really woeful performance from Iwata, and you might have sworn, only seeing the scoreline, I was swearing throughout most of this first half with the way that Jubilee were playing.
Yeah, it was pretty rough to watch. Reds took a fifth-minute lead through a David Moberg. He finished off a Reds counter with a shot across Yuji Kajikawa. Then 8 minutes later, the previously mentioned Yoshio Koizumi, who had set up the opener, side-footed home after Yusuke Matsuo pounced on a poor touch from Makito Ito. But truth be told, Ito was sold up the river by a pretty horrendous pass to him by his centre-back partner. Then 5 minutes before the break, Moberg's cross to the far post actually hit the post and went in. We don't need to have a cross versus shot debate on that one, I'm pretty sure, Sam. That was definitely a cross from Moberg. And then 3 goals in 16 second half minutes compounded Iwata's misery. First, Atsuki Ito volleyed in a Takehiro Akimoto cross in the 63rd minute to continue on his rich vein of goal-scoring form. Then Koizumi grabbed his second from an Ito cross, and then Kasper Juncker wrapped up the scoring by slotting past Kajikawa after he reacted first to Ataru Esaka's deflected through ball. So, yes, it was indeed a romp in the Shizuoka countryside for Reds, and that sees them climb above Idol FC Tokyo and up to a seventh in the table. That obviously has done their goal difference a huge amount of good, Sam. And on the flip side, as we said, Iwata returned to the foot of the table. But yes, that minus six is huge now, and their goal difference is now worst in the entire division. And for the fourth straight week, we have a new club at the foot of the table. Iwata have returned there after, of course, Kobe, Shimizu were the teams that were finished the match, the last two match days, at the foot of the table. So where do they go from here? They've just got to dust themselves off and hope that that was a one-off, and they try and get the new manager bounce, Sam, because obviously that was just a horrendous performance in what they hoped would be one of the showpiece occasions of their season. Obviously, they don't play too many games at Aircorpa. They schedule the inverted commas big games there. So to just not show up at all on that big occasion was hugely disappointing for them. And I guess their supporters probably wish that their game had been postponed for the typhoon as well.
Oh, absolutely, they do. It was a really poor performance. And, they played the other game at Ekopa. It was like second game of the season against Shimizu. It was only 2-1 that, but they got battered in that game as well. So maybe just stay at the Yamaha and it's not really working for you there. But, yeah, they're obviously going in for this new manager bounce. As I say, before this game, I thought Ito had done a very good job keeping this team competitive, because I think generally it's the worst team in the league. I think it's aging. We've said all about it all season, but they've always been fighting. But it's hard to really look past a 6-0 drawing like this. So it did look like tools were downed at various points of this game. So yeah, they're going to make a change. As it stands, we don't know the way they're going. There have been rumours that Masakatsu Suzuki, who was the manager that took them up last season, might be returning. I think he probably would have kept on, but he had some various health issues towards the end of last season. So maybe that is a kind of feel-good factor that could be brought into the club. Obviously, yeah, getting them promoted last season, maybe that could give them the bounce that they desperately require for these final 9 games. But it is going to be really difficult because, yeah, on paper, I think they are the worst team in the league. But, yeah, it's so tight down there. Any sort of advantage, it could go their way. But, yeah, you've got to pick these players up because, I mean, a 6-0 home defeat is very tough to get over. And as you say, it's dented their goal difference pretty badly. So, yeah, bottom worst goal difference in the league, it's not a position to be in.
No, not at all. And they travelled to Nagoya to open the match day 26 slate on Friday Night Football this coming Friday. All right, so before we leave these two teams, though, we did want to mention that Reds made it through to the Levain Cup semi-finals with a 3-0 win at home versus Nagoya in the second leg of their quarterfinal last Wednesday night. So, yes, the trilogy has concluded between Reds and Grampus. And, well, I guess it's safe to say that Reds had the last laugh. Yeah, sealing a spot again in the Levain Cup semifinals, where they will face a Cerezo Osaka, Sam. We can't mention their league fixture, of course, this week because it was postponed. But yeah, plenty of talking points from their second leg at Todoroki against Kawasaki, where Frontale looked to be heading through after Marcinho Brace put them 2-0 up on the night, and indeed a 3-1 up on aggregate just before the hour mark. But I guess in typical Kawasaki Cup fashion, yes, they were broken down at the death yet again. And there's a couple of Cerezo youngsters, I'm going to call Mutsuki Kato a youngster again this week, did the damage in, well, literally the closing stages of this game to seal a dramatic away goals victory for Cerezo.
Yeah, it was pretty unbelievable. Well, I say unbelievable. We were speaking before recording about that's just Kawasaki in cup competitions, isn't it? This time last year, they lost to Reds, also on away goals, also to a last-minute goal. And they lost to Oita with late goals, even went out of the Champions League this season, thanks to a late goal by JDT in a game they weren't even playing in. So it just seems to be the way Kawasaki do things. They've got they're a bit of a, bit of a receipt, I suppose, after they scored such a late winner against Yokohama F. Marinoff. So, yeah, it's just Frontale in cup competitions. But Cerezo, great for them, great resilience. Their season continues on all fronts, and yeah, it's been fantastic for them. So they meet Reds, I think, in the semi-finals starting, I think it's towards the end of September. That's a repeat of last season's semi-final. So they'll be hoping they can go a bit one better this season, because they're all set up for a very good push on both fronts in the cup, in both cup competitions.
Indeed, indeed. All right, so we'll mention the other half of the Levain Cup semi-final draw later on. But yes, it's wrapping up the two games from Saturday. As we said, Iwata returned to the foot of the table as Kobe climbed off it and up to 16th, the promotion relegation spot, 2 points ahead of both Iwata and Gamba, who played at home against Shimizu on Sunday, Sam. And after beginning the match day in 17th, unfortunately for Gamba and their supporters, they were unable to hold serve, if you like, as they ended the match day in a new low of 17th. And since their back-to-back wins in match days 12 and 13, they've won just one of their past 11 games. For Espolsa, in the ninth minute, Thiago Santana's blast from a tight angle hit the bar and bounced across goal. Then 9 minutes later, up the other end, Ryotaro Meshino drew a low save from Shuichi Gonda. Shimizu hit the woodwork again 9 minutes before the break when Yoshinori Suzuki's diving header came back off the bar, and Gamba went close just past the hour, but Musashi Suzuki was unable to get enough on his flick-on of a Genshoji header to steer the ball past Gonda. And then two S-Pulse subs piled the misery on Tomohiro Katanosaka. First, it was Benjamin Kololi, who took a pass from Carlinhos and fired across Masaaki Higashiguchi in the 73rd minute. And then 4 minutes from time, Carlinhos was on the receiving end. He was slipped in by Thiago and shot past Higashiguchi. Shimizu notching back-to-back wins for the first time all season, and they rose up to 12th in the table. So literally 2 weeks after being rock bottom in 18th, S-Pulse have climbed up to 12th. And, well, we hope they don't get a nosebleed being that high up the table, Sam. But, yeah, I guess this is just another frustrating one for Gamba and their supporters. They knew the equation before them at kickoff. They obviously could have gone back above Shimizu if they had have won. But it's just another frustrating one for them. On the flip side, S-Pulse are, loving it. As I said, back-to-back wins for the first time all year.
Yeah, it would be hugely frustrating for Gamba Osaka. This was a game I think they probably had to win. And obviously, massive relegation six-pointer. You've got to try and beat Shimizu at home, win your home games. It was a big occasion for them with the Expo, the new shirt, which looks like a London bus seat, which is I kind of like it in a strange way. And they'd named their mascot. I don't think Mo Flem got massive props on Twitter or anywhere. I don't think there were many fans of him, but it was cute in its own way, I suppose. But yeah, even on the pitch, they started quite well. They had a lot of the ball, but they didn't really seem to have the quality to really create or really take any chances. And Shimizu were the opposite. Like, they've got players up front that are going to take their chances to score goals. I say that after Santana hit the post early on. Poor Pikachu. I mean, it's an open goal that he's got to tap it into, and somehow he plays it across there. So I can't let him get away with that. But yeah, otherwise, it always looked like Shimizu would be able to score a goal when they went forward. But yeah, just it didn't work for Gamba. There were occasions, and the biggest one was that flick from Suzuki where he's just in front of goal, any sort of purchase on it, and he scores. But it just wasn't there for Gamba, and eventually Shimizu took their chances. Their bandwagon is really rolling now up into mid-table, but it's really difficult to see what Gamba can do differently. They've obviously brought in Suzuki, Meshino, Alano, and it's not really reviving their fortunes at the moment. They still don't look like a team that's going to create and take too many chances. They're reluctant to get rid of Katanosaka, and I mean, I think the fan base is fairly split on whether that would be a good idea or worthwhile. I know they've brought in a coach, as they did last year, just to try and help matters, but at the moment it doesn't seem to have improved them too much. And yeah, it's really difficult because it just seems like a bunch of players that on paper look quite good, but they're just unable to get anything out of these players. I mean, Gen Shoji, I mean, I don't know what's happened to him, because he's not even half the player he was at Kashima. He's just so far off that. Miura likewise, and it's just, how do you revive Gamba Osaka? It's a very difficult question. I'm not sure anyone at the club has the answer to it. I certainly don't have the answer to it. And at the moment, it does look like they're fizzling away to J2, but this is the J-League. Anything can happen. They'll probably go out and win 3-0 in their next game.
Yeah, as you say, it's a really impressive looking list of players. But yeah, until you actually go out there and get some results and show you deserve to wear that odd looking shirt, then the questions are just going to be continued to be asked of the coach and of the playing squad as a group, because they've just have not got it done all season, and it's just been a gradual slide down the table in the past couple of months. As I said, just the one win in 11 is obviously dreadful form in anyone's language. They were obviously off last week when their opponent had to have the game postponed, so surely they had to be ready for Shimizu, and they had to start a bit quicker and show a bit more purpose while they're still betting new players in. So it's a really difficult situation, and all they can do is keep on grinding, and then maybe you might do a Shimizu and get a couple of wins on the spin, and you might find yourself 12th in a couple of weeks time. But until they actually go and do it, then we're just watching them basically fade away, and it's obviously we know how frustrating it is for their supporters. Basically that's the situation around it up at the foot of the table. Then of course with Kyoto and Shonan not playing over the weekend with their games postponed, their situation basically remains as it was, although they were both leapfrogged by S-Pulse, of course. Fukuoka did not make up any ground on the teams around them as they headed up to Kashima and were on the end of a 2-0 defeat to Antlers. Of course, I mean, it was an admirable performance by Fukuoka to front up after what had gone on with their COVID situation over the past week or 10 days or so, of course, with the game against Gumba last week having to be postponed, and they put out threadbare lineups in the Levain Cup. We wondered last week, in last week's episode, whether the second leg on last Wednesday night would go ahead, and indeed it did, but with the Fukuoka having just three players on the bench and two of them goalkeepers, they still went out and beat Kobe 1-0 to wrap up their aggregate victory in the Levain Cup quarterfinal that saw them into the semifinals of that competition for the first time in their history, where they will meet Hiroshima, who beat Yokohama F. Marinos home and away in their quarterfinal. But Sam, yes, unfortunately for Vispa, it just wasn't their day up at the Kashima Soccer Stadium. Antlers back up to second in the table with a first win in six games, as Daiki Iwamasa got a victory in his first game in permanent charge of the club. So in some respects, I guess, a new manager bounce after the sacking of Rene Weiler.
Yeah, definitely. And you could see after the first goal, I mean, it's the most fortunate goal you'll ever see, but the reaction of the players afterwards, Suzuki just rushes over to Iwamasa, kind of rugby tackles him to the ground in some sort of bear hug. So they were really together. You could absolutely see that they were delighted that Iwamasa was their manager, which maybe suggests that there was something wrong with the way Rene Weiler was handling things, or there was some sort of disconnect. But yeah, they definitely seemed together. I don't think they necessarily played that well. It was still fairly long ball, I thought, and fairly direct football, but they got their goal in fortunate circumstances. Suzuki crossing into the area, and it's going out of the box, it's going that way, but it hits Hiratsuka, wicked deflection in past Murakami, so there's nothing they could do about that. And then generally it was just a Vispa, I don't think they had enough in them. It was kind of a game too far for them, because it was still mainly the team that had played in midweek, and they managed to get a few more players onto the bench. But yeah, I think they were running on fumes towards the end. They looked somewhat dangerous in them. I mean, they were kind of forced into having to play Mary, Lukian and Wanmar all as basically as strikers. So that is a really good aerial threat, and Jordi Cruz balls in, they were causing issues. Mary went the closest when he headed off the post. So there was a little bit of a threat for Vispa, but the longer the game went on, the more they faded out of it, and eventually Kashima sealed the 2-0 victory on the breakthrough Everaldo. But yeah, I give a lot of credit to Vispa for the way they've managed to navigate these three games. Hopefully in a week's rest now, they should be able to get most, if not everybody, back from their COVID absences, and yeah, they can then really tackle the end of the season, because yeah, unfortunately this has brought them closer to the relegation zone. It's not necessarily their fault, but yeah, it's still like 3 points above Kobe now. It's going to be a difficult end to the season for them, but hopefully they can manage it with as fully fit a squad as possible. And for Kashima, this was yeah a really good result. It got them back up into second, especially with Marinos not playing here, and then they're not going to play the next weekend either. If Kashima can get the win and get it close, or even start to overtake F. Marinos, even though Marinos will have lots of games in hand, it does put pressure on Marinos, because you always want the points on the board, because they're guaranteed and nothing is for F. Marinos. So yeah, it puts the pressure on, and it's a perfect start for Daiki Iwamasa.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, you're right to praise Fukuoka there. I mean, yeah, the situation they've been through, and the fact that they were right in this game, literally until second half stoppage time, when Kashima were able to seal it with Everaldo's goal. But yeah, I mean, yeah, that's it. The F. Marinos actually don't play in the next two match days, do they, Sam? Because of the ACL setup that we're going to chat about towards the end of the episode. But so yeah, Kashima have an away game against Shonan this coming weekend, the only game on Sunday actually that will be played from the match day 26 slate on Sunday, and then they follow that up with an away visit to Kawasaki. So that's obviously on the opposite end of the ease of difficulty scale, but yeah, they do indeed have an opportunity to go to the top of the table before F. Marinos will take to the field again in J1 action. But yes, I guess their inconsistency in recent weeks means that is far from a given in either game, really. And yeah, I mean, the result was obviously the most important thing, and you could see how much it meant to Iwamasa here. But yeah, I think obviously they'll be trying to spin it in a positive manner, and indeed all you can do is win your game, and the fact that they rose from fifth back up to second is yeah, should make them feel good about themselves. But yeah, I think overall, from what I could tell from the highlights, yeah, Fukuoka were very much in this game. And yeah, the chances for John Mary, and indeed inside the last 10 minutes, Lukian had a shot from distance that was saved quite well down low by Kwonson Tay. But then, yes, the second goal, the killer, the heartbreak for Vispa, it came in the 93rd minute when they were pressing for their equaliser Fukuoka, but across into the box was cleared, and Everaldo was sent to racing clear. His attempted chip of Murakami glanced off the keeper's gloves, and the striker was able to slot home the loose ball. I think the funniest, one of the funniest moments from the weekend from a telecast perspective, Sam, was the fact that even though Everaldo was 15 yards inside his own half when the ball was played forward to him, the DAZN replay, I guess the director, just out of habit, paused the video to check if Everaldo was offside or not. So that was very nice of them to do that. But I think, yeah, just for comedy purposes for the rest of us.
Oh, yeah, I did see that. That was quite hilarious. I think he was onside in any case, whatever half he was in. But, yeah, good for them. It wasn't the only kind of television faux pas, I suppose. There was, I don't know if you saw in the Nagoya Tosu game, but maybe 20 minutes to go, the director just put good night up on the screen.
Yes, so, I saw a screenshot of that. I didn't see it live, but, yes, that was a good one, yeah. Apparently a Nagoya player was down receiving treatment for an injury or something.
Yeah, I think that was it. There was definitely some sort of break in play, and the director thought, oh, I've had enough. That's enough of this game. I'm off.
Yeah, outstanding stuff. All right, well, yeah, as we said, a difficult one for Fukuoka to take, but yeah, hopefully they're coming out of the worst of their COVID situation, and yeah, it's obviously going to be a scrap in the last 10 games of the season, but yeah, on the evidence of their performance on Sunday, they're not going to go down without a fight. There's no question about that, and yeah, so well done to Fukuoka for their battling performance, but yes, the result is all that mattered for Antlers, as we said, as they moved back up to second in the table. The previous occupants, rather, of second spot in the table were, of course, Kashiwa Reysol, who had yet worked their way steadily up to second in the table, and at the time they kicked off on Sunday, obviously, were the closest challengers to Yokohama F. Marinos, but they succumbed 3-2 to San Freche at Hitachi Dai on Sunday. So, yeah, a frustrating one for Reysol to take. I guess, in some respects, Sam, I guess it might qualify as a game of the season contender due to its seesawing nature. But I guess, yeah, some of the goals were comedic in their nature. So maybe in that regard, I don't think it deserves to be rated that highly.
No, it was an exciting game, but technically it was rubbish. Like, both teams were really all over the place. There were lots of errors in this game. I mean, you'll see the greatest comedy of errors for an own goal I think you'll ever see. So, yeah, it was an interesting game, but it didn't seem to be fitting two teams chasing the ACL. This seemed more like a relegation scrap at times. But, yeah, it was definitely entertaining. And, yeah, let's... Yeah, it was just all over the place. Ding-dong battle, really exciting. But, yeah, quality-wise, very poor.
Indeed. So Hiroshima took a fourth-minute lead when Gakuto Notsuda sent in an in-swinging free kick from the right, and that was headed in powerfully from 6 yards by Nassim Ben Khalifa. Reysol almost equalised soon after, but Mal Hosoya's fierce drive from a tight angle in the 12th minute hit Keisuke Osako's near post and flashed across goal. Then the keeper had a lucky escape when he spilled a catch from a Kiyoshihashi shot from inside the D, but the ball squirted past his left-hand post. Then Shihashi was involved in the leveler 4 minutes before the break. His ball found Tomoya Koyomatsu, who passed to Yuki Muto, the journeyman continuing his rich vein of form with a composed strike past Osako. And then shortly after the restart, Kashiwa took the lead through a calamitous Hayato Araki own goal. I mean, if that doesn't go viral, I don't know what should, Sam. Araki tried to clear a Naoki Kawaguchi cross, but it came straight back to him off a teammate Taishi Matsumoto. He panicked and hooked an attempted clearance over his stranded goalkeeper Osako and into the net. So 2-1 to Reysol shortly, as I said, after the restart. But then just past the hour, San Frecce drew level themselves when Matsumoto made amends for his, albeit unwitting, part in the own goal when he fired in a tremendous daisy cutter from inside the D after a Douglas Vieira layoff for his first J1 goal. And then in the 67th minute, Hiroshima went back in front of this seesawing affair when Tomoya Fuji's cross from 25 yards had just cleared the top of intended target Vieira's head, but bounced into the net at the far post just out of reach of Masato Sasaki's desperate dive. So, yeah, there were a couple of decent goals in there, I suppose, Sam. But, yeah, calamity all over the shop. And I don't think we need to have an argument about Fuji's, do we? That was definitely a cross as well.
Yeah, we're on board completely there this week, which is nice to see. Yeah, definite crossing. It was one of those where that, because of the angle of it, it doesn't really matter to him if anyone gets a touch on it or not, and whoever gets a touch, because the angle of it is always going to go into that far post. So, yeah, a decent one. But, yeah, it was a really interesting game. And then there was the bit of complaints from Raystall right towards the end. I think it was like the 95th minute. I think Hosoya is running through towards the edge of the area. There was a bit of a coming together, but nothing happened from that. I've had a quick look at it. I think it's just outside the area. Probably would have been a foul, but this one was outside the area. So I think at least not giving a penalty was the correct decision. But yeah, it was a really open game. It was exciting, I suppose, but both teams could really need to just calm things down a little bit and settle in a little bit more, less ridiculous passes across the box and all that sort of thing. But yeah, it was keeps Hiroshima right in this ACL race. There's not, well, now there's 3 points separating second and sixth, so yeah, it looks like we've got excitement at both ends.
Most definitely. And yeah, Hiroshima obviously keeping the good times rolling after their victory in the Levain Cup quarterfinal over F. Marinos, as I said, winning both legs at home and away against the current J1 leaders. And yes, they edged above the idle Kawasaki side and up to fifth in the table with this win over Raysol, who, as we said, slipped a spot to third with Kashima climbing back up to second in the table. So, yeah, it's a bit of a hodgepodge, obviously, in the top six with a number of teams having games in hand. And, of course, Kawasaki having three of them. And, yes, they'll begin to make up some of their games on the leaders Yokohama F. Marinos while the F. Marinos are away on ACL duty, of course. Well, not away. They just head up to Saitama, of course. But, yes, and not in J1 action. And, well, yes, with those games at the top and the bottom of the table wrapped up, all that we have to do, Sam, is to talk about the final game that was played on the weekend in the Match Day 25 slate. And it was the only draw of the six games played. And it happened at the real estate agent in front of the Station Stadium down in Tosu, where it ended 0-0 between Sagan and Nagoya Grampus. Plenty of reasonable looking chances here, Sam, but ultimately not enough quality from either side to beat either goalkeeper, with both Park Il-gyu and Mitch Langerak in decent form, although well, not surprisingly, it seems to happen on a weekly basis. Park's walkabout nature almost got him into massive trouble, but in arguably the miss of the round, Takuya Shigehiro spared his blushes.
Oh, goodness me. This happened almost a minute before the Hiroshima own goal when I was watching live. I was thinking, what is going on here? But yeah, long ball over the top. Obviously, Park has to run out for it, but he's beaten to it by Sommer. Sommer makes some space, rolls it across. Shigehiro's coming in about 6 yards out, six, 7 yards out, and open goal. All he has to do is tuck it in, and somehow he puts it wide. It is an absolutely unbelievable miss. I criticised Pikachu earlier. His was much more difficult than this one. This one, any player scores that in their sleep, so I have no idea how Shigehiro missed it, and it cost Nagoya, and it's Hasegawa's fault for taking my man Nagai out of his team for this and really costing me in the fancy football. Nagai would have scored that and we wouldn't be moaning. So yeah, just slightly frustrated, but yeah, it was just I don't know if it quite summed up the game. I think there were chances for both sides. Both sides played okay. I thought Park, you have to take the rough with the smooth with Park. You know, he's got those few errors in him. There was that one Leo Silva shot where he gambles and then realises it swerved the other way and has to get back, and then he makes one save and then he pulls it out and he causes a bit of panic. But generally, he played well. Langerak is always decent in goal. So it was a little bit of a wild game for 0-0. And then Nagoya fans are going to come out of it with plenty of complaints about penalties. Sento involved in both of them. The one just after that manic piece of play that I mentioned with Park, there were a couple of block shots after that. Then Sento gets the ball. He goes down. There was a VAR review, but there was one replay which saw that he couldn't really tell. It didn't look like there was too much contact. So that wasn't that was waved away. And then there was another one in the vein of the one at Kobe. There was also one at Jubilo, I think, where I think he was pushed over by Sakai, and I think that should have been a penalty as well, but I think it was 3-0 down at the time, so it didn't really matter. But this one, Sento, there's a coming together between Sento and Diego, where Sento's in the area, running out of the area. The referee gives a free kick, even though if there is any contact, it is in the area. So I'm not really sure what the VAR process is, because if he looks at that, I don't think it's a penalty. I don't think there's any contact at all. So it can't be a free kick. But is the VAR just deciding penalty or no penalty, and then it goes to a free kick otherwise? Because, yeah, it can't possibly be a free kick where it was given. So I'm not really sure exactly of the rules of that. So if it's just no penalty, just stick with whatever was the decision. But I'm not really sure, but I know we've confused plenty of people, and plenty were saying, well, if you're given a free kick, you've got to give a penalty, which is true, but I just didn't think it was a foul on Sento. So I don't think Nagoya were as hard done to as maybe their supporters feel they were, but I think draw was probably a fair result because both teams had decent chances.
Yeah, I guess the two goalkeepers. I mean, Park just, I think he just gets bored, right? I think he just wants to entertain himself as much as anybody else. So he's always up to something. But definitely capable of the sublime save or two per game. And he didn't let us down on all accounts on this occasion. Yeah, Grampus supporters. I guess if it was my team and those incidents happened to Tokyo, you'd like to think you'd you'd maybe get one if you haven't had the rub of the green recently. But, again, it wasn't their afternoon. And, every point is precious for Grampus. They're still not completely out of the mire themselves, of course. So while they obviously would have loved to return home with all three, I guess at the end of the day, they'll take one in a game that, it pretty much petered out after a couple of saves from Langerak and Park around the hour mark. And I don't know if both teams kind of shook hands on a draw here, again, to use a cricketing term. But either way, that's what they both had to settle for. And both are the very embodiment of mid-table, not quite mediocrity, but it's a commonly used phrase, so I'll run with it. It's Tosu are ninth and Nagoya 10th, so they're both literally smack bang in the middle of the J1 table after they've both played 24 games. And most of the rest of the teams have played 25, but almost every team's been hit with a postponement or a cancellation in the past couple of match days. So probably just about half of the teams have played 25 games after 25 match days. And that's where we'll wrap up our review of the weekend's top flight action. And we've touched on the Levain Cup as much as we usually ever do on this podcast, Sam. So I think we can move on and talk about what's to come in the ACL and indeed in J1 in the week to come. So the three ACL clubs who made it through to the round of 16 have their crunch games taking place towards the end of this week. Of course, Japan is hosting the East Zone. So, all games are being played at Saitama, some at Saitama Stadium, those involving the J1 clubs in the round of 16. And the other two fixtures will be played at Komaba. So on Thursday night, it's the all J1 round of 16 clash between Kobe and Yokohama F Marinos. And then on Friday, Urawa take on JDT of Malaysia. Obviously, this is the first one on Thursday, Sam, is a clash between teams at either end of the J1 table. But Kobe have just returned to winning ways. And, top versus bottom, it never tends to matter, does it, in J1? So F Marinos will obviously go in short-priced favourites. But, Kobe have a previous decent history in this competition. So while the form book doesn't suggest it, I mean, they'll probably fancy their chances.
Yeah, they generally save their better football for the ACL. It's obviously their biggest ambition winning this competition. Lots of eggs go into this basket, probably less so this season given their position in the league. And they come against the Marinos side probably at the ideal time in all competition. They've lost their last three games, so it's probably the lowest ebb they've been all season. Kobe obviously got a morale-boosting victory at the weekend. So it kind of evens itself out a little bit, I think, in the kind of both teams' momentum coming into this. Obviously, Marinos have had a bit more of a break going into the game. But, yeah, it seems to be a really exciting one on paper. I'm not 100% sure which way it's going to go. I mean, Kobe have got Muto, who came back from injury at the weekend. So things are working in their favour, but Marinos have got such a good team. They could choose one of two teams to play in this game. They've got that many good players. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a really exciting one. And, yeah, I'm not here to make a prediction on this game because I have no idea which way it will go.
Yeah, it should be a terrifically interesting encounter. And, yeah, obviously a huge one for both teams. And then, yeah, on the Friday night then, Sam, how much of a challenge will the JDT pose to Reds? Obviously, Reds, they can't have done much better over the past weekend than winning 6-0 away. So they'll be going in cock-a-hoop. But, yeah, it would be foolish for them to underestimate their opponents from Malaysia.
Oh, absolutely. JDT obviously came through a group with Ulsan and Kawasaki, who at the start of the tournament, you would probably say they were among the two favourites to win the competition. So to come through that, then they're a very good team. They've proven that. And Reds, though, I think they're coming into it in decent form. They managed to rest plenty of players at half-time at the weekend. So they're coming through. They've got Sakai back, Schultz back. So it's looking like a strong team. And the opposite of the group stage, Reds are the team with home advantage here, whereas JDT had that and I think used that in the group stage. So it'll be interesting to see how they can perform away from home. JDT, I'm sure there'll be a very good atmosphere created by the Urawa fans in that game. So I think home advantage should really prove worthwhile for Urawa Reds, and hopefully we'll get an All Japan semi-final on Monday, I believe, that game will take place.
Yes, indeed. So, yes, those the winners of those two games, as you said, Sam, they'll meet on Monday the 22nd at Saitama. Semantically, we're a little bit different, but, yeah, we're basically on the same page, Sam, but, yeah, just referencing things in slightly different ways. So the overall round of 16 takes place this Thursday and Friday, but, yes, it's the East Zone quarterfinals. Then the East Zone semifinals will be played on Monday the 22nd at Saitama, and, yes, that could be an all-Japanese encounter. Then the East Final will be played on Thursday the 25th, also at Saitama Stadium, with the final over two legs in February next year. Okay, so the J1 match day 26 and 27 slates will be reduced to six games apiece, with the ACL clubs otherwise occupied. And yes, they will make up their games in hand for match day 26 in the middle of September, and in match day 27 early on in October. So looking ahead to the weekend's action, Sam, we've already referenced the fact that it gets going on Friday night with the Nagoya hosting Iwata, and it concludes on Sunday with Shonan entertaining Kashima. But in the meantime, we have four games on Saturday. So is there anything in there that grabs you as a pick of the weekend?
Yeah, I'm between two, really. Two games containing one team going for the ACL, one team in the relegation battle. I think my pick will be Shimizu versus Kashima. I think that should be a really open game. Obviously, Shimizu have found a load of attackers and they're just going for it now, and they're scoring plenty of goals, and Kashima could prove that they can do both going forward and conceding at the back. And I think this is a really interesting and open game. But the other one, likewise, Hiroshima versus Gamba Osaka is equally important, and Gamba have got to find something. They did manage a victory over Hiroshima in a rearranged game about a month or two ago, so maybe they can take some belief from that. And that is almost the more important game, because obviously Gamba could find themselves bottom at the start of that game if Jubilo do get some sort of bounce and beat Nagoya. So yeah, in fact, I'm changing my pick. Hiroshima versus Gamba will be my game of the weekend.
Okay, that's an interesting about face there, but yeah, I think you were right the first time. I'm gonna go with the Shimizu game, but that's fine. We can have one each, and yeah, thanks for leaving that one there for me. Yeah, I tell you what, I don't often make predictions to listeners, and as you know, if you listen regularly, you know that when I do, they don't tend to come true. But I tell you what, if I was you, I'd probably pop 100 yen on Iago Pikachu to open his J1 account on Saturday. I think he's going to get those 100,000 volts absolutely on point against Kashima Reysol. And yeah, I'd back him in for his first J1 goal. A child-friendly kickoff time at 6 p.m. on Saturday night. That's, our place will be rollicking with S-Pulse and Pikachu in action, and yet not me not having to stress about to FC Tokyo, as their game away at Kobe is obviously off with Vissel in ACL action, and I don't have to worry about that until the middle of next month. So, all right, then. Well, yeah, there you go. A couple of really interesting looking games to look forward to from the match day 26 slate on Saturday then. And well, yeah, I just maybe we should give a mention as well to Fukuoka Kawasaki, Sam, because yeah, hopefully Fukuoka will be back to full strength by the time that game kicks off. And yeah, Frontale begin to try and make up some of the ground that they have to do on F Marinos while they're out of J1 action. So that also has its intrigue, I think, that game down at the Best Denki Stadium. So yeah, six games to wrap up in next week's episode. And obviously whatever goes on in the ACL will keep you very busy, as you've finally given me the elbow. And yes, you'll be co-hosting with a different entity next week.
Yeah, the coup has finally happened. I'm finally taking over. It's the end of Ben, at least for 1 week at least. And yeah, thank you for giving me the reins. I promise to look after the podcast as much as possible. And yeah, it's probably about time we gave you a break, I suppose, after 428 episodes without taking an episode off. So yeah, put your feet up. I hope you have a great time with your family, and we'll try and look after it, I promise.
Yeah, thanks very much, mate. Obviously, I couldn't be leaving in the podcast in a safer pair of hands. So yeah, looking forward to listening to next week's episode. I thought you were going to tease who your co-host was going to be there, but maybe you want to keep it a little bit mysterious. I guess most listeners could probably take a wild stab in the dark as to who it's going to be.
Yeah, I will keep cards close to my chest, but yeah, it's the person you probably think it is.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. All right. So, yeah, as I say, I'm looking forward to, yeah, having a little bit of a breather next week, the last few days while my mum's in the country. So, yeah, that's obviously, yeah, taking priority for me and my family for the time being. But then, yes, we'll be back into it because basically the week after my summer holiday will be done and dusted. And, yeah, we'll be back into, well, as we know, the stretch run has already begun. But, yeah, I'll be ready to tackle it head on after, yeah, taking that little break next week. So, all right, Sam, well, that's it. A slightly shorter episode than usual, but that's to be expected, obviously, with only six games to review. But, yeah, you've obviously got J1 and ACL to work through next week. So, yeah, looking forward to listening to that.
Yeah, it should be a really exciting week. I always love the ACL when it gets to this sort of stage. They're always exciting games, and just being one-legged as well. Yeah, you're guaranteed some sort of drama eventually. So, yeah, it'll be great to speak about that next week, and hope you enjoy listening.
Thank you very much. All right, well, that is it then for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank all of our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. If you'd like to get involved, please visit patreon.com/JTalkPod. Listeners, we say it each and every week, but yes, we'd like to thank you for listening wherever you are. Sam will be back with his guest co-host to review Match Day 26 and the ACL in next week's episode. He'll speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast. Yes, 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 yes.